The Defense Department and the General Services Administration have an information-sharing problem. They aren't sharing information about space that's available on military installations and about the agencies that could use that space. Brian Lepore is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO and looking at how to improve that collaboration. Brian, I appreciate having you on the program. As always, you write in this work, GAO's designated the Pentagon's support infrastructure management as a high-risk area. What is support infrastructure management, and why is it on the high-risk list in the first place? Thanks for coming on, Brian.
Well, first of all, Francis, thank you for having me. It is always a pleasure to be with you. We have designated defense support infrastructure as a high-risk area because it is such a large enterprise, and defense support infrastructure really can be thought of as anything, any physical plant and equipment, if you will, needed to support the mission. And we put it on the high-risk list because DoD has been facing some significant challenges in reducing excess and obsolete infrastructure. And why does that matter? The operation and maintenance of unutilized and underutilized facilities consumes significant resources that could be used elsewhere in the defense budget. So it's simply a way to say DoD probably really needs to focus a little more on getting rid of unutilized or underutilized facilities or using it in a more efficient way.
Maybe I'm a jaded radio host, Brian, but I don't get my mind blown very often anymore. You did it in this work. The Defense Department's real property portfolio consisted of more than 562,000 facilities with an estimated value of $850 billion. I had no idea that was the size and scope of what we're looking at here.
It is really an enormous enterprise. And, you know, a way to think about it, Francis, is DoD's infrastructure is just a little bit less than half of all federal infrastructure, all the other agencies combined are the other half. So it is really an enormous enterprise.
The Defense Department, you write, has guidance that outlines how they can use vacant space and partially vacant space, unutilized and underutilized, respectively, are the technical terms, on military installations to entities that are not a Defense Department affiliated. What does that guidance look like, and how clear is it for GSA or other agencies to understand?
Well, the guidance for DoD is really internal to the department, and what it really lays out is how the military services are going to manage their real property. And a way to think about it, it really lays out four primary things that they need to be doing. The first one is to budget and financially manage their properties for the mission. That's probably pretty self-evident. The second one, they ought to have an accurate inventory of what they have. Third, they should ensure that the property is used to maximum extent possible. And the last one is dispose of real property that is no longer needed for current or future defense requirements. So that's the DoD set of guidance and instructions. On the GSA, General Services Administration side, they are required to set real property management policy for the federal government as a whole. It's actually called the landlord role. And the second thing they really do, among other things, among many things really, is to maintain the federal real property profile. That is an invitation, an inventory of all federal real property, and it actually includes DoD's.
There are a couple points in here where you refer to the guidance that strike me as the Pentagon being on the right track. So please correct me if I'm wrong. In instances where there are competing interests for space, officials reported considering priorities set forth in guidance for assigning available space. Officials reported considering whether the tenant could potentially have a negative effect on the installation's ability to comply with regulations. It sounds like, at least in those areas, the Pentagon's guidance is good and the people at the seven installations you visited are actually using it, which we don't always see.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what we found when we went out to the installations, to the seven installations, and talked to the military departments as well, is that there was a pretty good understanding of what they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, what the installation commander ultimately really wants to make sure is that if they are going to take a non-DoD tenant onto the installation, that it doesn't have an impact on the mission. Ultimately, we have military bases for a mission, not just because it's nice to have military bases. And what the military installation commanders were trying to do is to make sure that if they agree to take somebody, they will still be able to do their primary mission.
And you write installation selected permits as the appropriate real estate instrument when issuing grants to a non-DOD federal agency as outlined in that guidance. And it strikes me that makes sense because that way they have a process in place for knowing who's where when it comes to the unutilized and underutilized space.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there are a variety of ways that they do that. And let me give you a really interesting example of how that gets implemented, the guidance that you just talked about. One of the things that an installation commander would likely do if a tenant wanted to move onto the installation, they would want to know, is the specific location where the tenant is going to be located consistent with the area mission, if you will. And let me give the specific example. An installation commander would be unlikely to take an industrial-type tenant into a military family housing area. It's a little bit like zoning is really what you think about, what it sounds like, and it's all contained in something called the installation master plan.
It sounds like they're using the best practices that we see in localities like zoning-type best practices and so on.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, Francis, I mean, I think one of the things that we also came away with from this work was that DOD really was trying to do a good job, particularly at the installation level. We didn't see anybody resisting taking tenants. What we simply saw was the installations trying to make sure that if they do it, that it's going to be consistent with the mission that of the installation.
One part of this that I think is interesting, Brian Lepore, the Government Accountability Office, my guest, is there's some potential bargain shopping for the non-DOD agencies here. You write, non-DOD federal agencies can save costs on commercial leases because DOD charges for use of space by other federal entities on a cost recovery basis. That means they just need to get out of it what they're putting into it, right?
Absolutely. And it's a good deal for the federal tenants, typically, if they're coming out of commercial space. Think about it this way. If a federal tenant, a non-DOD tenant, is in commercial real estate, they're paying rent. They're paying rent to use that space to some landlord. DOD does not charge them rent, so the rent essentially goes down to zero. All the tenant typically pays on the installation is they'll pay the utility costs that they will incur for the utilities they consume on the installation, and they will provide maintenance to the facility. On DOD's side, they now save those utility charges and they save that maintenance cost. So there's even a financial incentive for DOD to do this.
Okay, so here's where the monkey wrench gets thrown in. Routine information sharing doesn't occur between DOD and the General Services Administration concerning opportunities to move non-Pentagon federal agencies onto military installations. Is this just they haven't gotten around to that yet, or they have a system that's not effective, or is there some resistance that you detected?
We did not really detect too much resistance. I think what we found was that there was a process in place at GSA. The process did not include DOD, and that's simply where it stood. Let me give you an example. If I'm a federal agency and I need commercial space, and I'll go to GSA, and it's up to GSA to find me that space, they will typically look in a federal building. They will look in commercial space, and they actually do not talk to any federal agency about space except the Postal Service. They will actually contact the Postal Service to see whether they have space, but they do not contact anybody else. And so this may be a case where it simply fell through the cracks.
Do we have a sense of how GSA connects with those other agencies, the other entities that they do deal with? Is there something like an MLS, a multiple listing service that real estate agents use, where you can go on and say, Brian Lepore or Francis Rose wants to buy a house, and this is what's available?
Yeah, they do have something like that. It's a little bit like an inventory of property that's available. The biggest concern we had in this area was that because GSA does not consider DOD property when they're trying to find space for a federal agency, they had not made any attempt to figure out at DOD who should they call. And so that's basically what they told us. When we talked to GSA, they said, well, we don't know who to contact over at DOD.
And you write DOD is not as proactive as they could be either. They wait, you say, for non-DOD federal agencies to inquire whether space is available and don't generally reach out to GSA or agencies. So there's, I mean, I don't know that anybody expects them to be in the marketing real estate business, but there's not that, not any proactivity happening right now is what it sounds like.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we had a lot of discussion as we did the study on what it means for DOD to be reaching out. It's exactly as you put it. Do we really want to see DOD going into the property marketing business? But the other point I'll make, Francis, is that DOD has made it clear for some time now that they believe they have significant excess infrastructure capacity. And what we wanted to try to do with this study is to see, is there another way for DOD to begin to use some of that excess capacity and try to reduce their cost. And so that's really how we went at this.
Brian, recommendation that DOD and GSA collaborate. Do you have a sense of what that collaboration would look like or what information they should share or where that would live?
Yeah, we had a two-part recommendation, actually. The first part was that GSA and DOD work together to share information about non-DOD agencies trying to find space. So that really goes to the idea that if a tenant, if a federal agency comes to GSA and says, hey, I need space, it needs to be office space, it needs to support X number of people, that they include DOD in that list of properties or potential locations where they could place a tenant. The second thing we also recommended was that the agencies lay out a list of contacts, if you will. And GSA makes a good point in one sense. DOD is an enormous enterprise, and it was somewhat compelling to us when GSA said, well, we really aren't sure who we should call, and so the recommendation almost became self-evident. Get together, share your phone number, share your email addresses, and try to establish that list of contacts. Both agencies concurred with this recommendation.